We're doing Koheles, what's called the 7th chapter, the 19th Pasuk. Let's remind ourselves what we saw. Shlomo HaMelech had said, Al tehi tzadik harbe. In Pasuk 16, he said, Don't be so into piety. You got to do cruel things sometimes. We gave the example, a guy's leg is stuck in the train tracks, he's about to be mowed over. You better hack off that leg or he's going to die. So sometimes, you know, you got to do stuff. There were stories of people who were stuck, their arm was stuck in a car, and the car was going to explode. There was a car accident. You have people who are bitten by a snake. You know, it's interesting. Here in Israel, people are dying from snake bites. And it used to be that the Red Cross in my day switched and said not to make a tourniquet. They said you shouldn't stop the blood flow from a snake bite. Where you tie the artery so that there's no more blood flow from the snake bite. I don't know what they'd say today. I don't know. Saying
I heard you're supposed to like suck on it even.
No.
No?
Nope.
Don't suck.
You never suck on it. That's like only in movies.
So
like, I don't.
You die too.
Okay, back to our pasuk. So Al tehi tzadik harbe, Shlomo HaMelech said, don't take piety to the extremity because it's not right. And then he said, Al tishah harbe, be careful not to be too wicked. There are times when, even if you did a little bit of wickedness, don't take that to the extremity. You got to know how to balance the two. You want to be a doctor? Sometimes that involves hurting people, yes. Part of medicine is it hurts. The baby cries when you check his ears. Sometimes you got to do things that are painful. And then, the pasuk, we're up to pasuk 19. Wisdom gives strength to the wise. More than 10 shields in the city. Wisdom will do you better than 10 shields in the city. So let's begin maybe with Rashi's pshat. Rashi learns, it's saying if you did a little bit of evil, don't do a lot. Stop, pause, review, and do tshuva. This sounds easier said than done. I want to share with you a phone call I got this week. Just contemplating whether I should tell you guys the real version, because I'm online. I always change the facts. I think I'll have to change the facts here too. Okay. Remind me after class. I could tell you the real version. At any rate, the story is the same. It's just a question of changing a few details. I get a phone call from a soldier. And he says, it was Shabbos. And suddenly, he hears his phone going off. He gets an SMS. And his Yitzhar got the better of him. So he goes and opens the phone. He sees the SMS. He writes back. It's an ex-girlfriend from his deep, dark history. And after about 5 minutes of SMSing on Shabbos, he puts down the phone. And he says to himself, okay, so you're a fake. It's time to go to Mincha. And he says to himself, what am I doing going to Mincha for? Yeah, right. Like, I believe in all this. What did I just do? So he's feeling very lousy with himself. And this is why he called me. He said, and then he remembered a Rambam we learned together. We had learned the Rambam, Igeret Teiman. The Rambam writes in his Yemenite epistle. He writes to the people of Yemen who are being persecuted. The Arabs at the time were telling them to convert to Islam or die. And he tells them they're not allowed to convert. And he writes this whole letter about their responsibility to leave Yemen, not to stick it out and try to figure out ways around the decree. And then he says, you have to know, there are 613 mitzvot. And when Yeravam ben Nevat, who is one of the greatest sinners of Jewish history, because he led the Jewish people to paganism, when he didn't put on tefillin in the morning, so in heaven they didn't say, well, he's a bum, he led them to paganism, of course he didn't put on tefillin in the morning. They didn't say that. They said, another one. gets added to the list. So sometimes when a person sins, he feels like, well, if I did this, then what's the point in doing all the other stuff? That's not true. If a person fell in one area, he's still held accountable for every other area. He can't say, okay, I'm a goner, it's over. No. So he told me that came haunting him. He was standing there telling himself, do I go daven mincha or not after what I just did? And that's it. He was thinking to you know, take off his yarmulke. And then he said to himself, wait a second, so I fell. That doesn't mean everything else is a fake, and that doesn't mean I can just do away with everything else. But then he said to himself, but I don't know if I get another SMS if I'm going to answer it or not. Meaning, he was very honest with himself. He said, I don't even regret what I did. But he reminded himself that the fact that he's not standing up to this mitzvah does not mean he can just do away with all the others. So this idea, when he called me, he called to say thank you. He called, he said, look, I know I fell into a certain area. That's the detail I changed. But everything else in the story is accurate. But what area he fell in, I changed. But it doesn't really matter. But at least when I remembered that idea, I didn't let myself fall on everything else in life. That's what I said, I changed the facts. Even though a lot of people have that Yetzer Hara. But I want to take this another step, because it's relevant to all of life, not only Torah. And if we learn this tool, then we can have a much happier life. I want to ask you guys a personal question now. You don't have to answer me, but I want you to answer yourself. If we took life and put it as a pie before us, and we divided it into segments, and I'd say there's this 20% segment where you look at yourself and you say, I'm not happy with myself. I'm not living up to my potential. I'm wrong in this area. Do you guys know what you'd put in that 20%, 15%, 20%? Is there anyone here who doesn't know what they'd put there? I think within a minute, people could fill in a list. And if they think of... I think that for the average person, it's in the realm of 20%. The way we behave, the things we've done. But let me ask you, in all honesty, if you look at all of life, you look at your full day, you look at everything you've done, is it really more than 20%? Because I think that most of us can really look and say 80% of what I'm doing right. The guy who isn't keeping Shabbos is still keeping kosher. There are other areas. And even the guy who isn't keeping kosher, well, wait a second. How much background does he have? Where does he come from? How much could he realistically expect himself to advance? How much has he advanced? So we look at ourselves and we're super focused on that 20%. And we're so focused that we forget we're 80% good. And on the contrary, let's take a small example. A person has challenged himself to a diet. And then he doesn't live up to it, like everyone. You know, he loses and then he gains, and then he loses and then he gains. What does he feel like? He feels like, very often, he feels like a loser. A person challenges himself, he's not going to yell at someone. He's not going to lose his temper. And then he loses his temper. What does he feel like? I'm a loser. I told myself I'm not going to do it. Person learns the laws of Lashon Hara. And then he knows. He messes up. Shouldn't have said that. But he doesn't just feel like shouldn't have said that. He feels like I have to ignore it, because if I only face it, then I'm a really terrible person. No, I'm not. There's 80% of me that's good. There's 20% that's problematic. So, 80% is good. The problem becomes when we identify with that. When we say, I'm the guy who did this. And that's who I am. So let me tell you a story. There was a Jew who raped a 7-year-old girl. True story. And then he had to identify who he is. So it would have been very easy for him to say, I'm the guy who raped a 7-year-old girl. I forgot to mention she was married. You guys know who I'm talking about?
David.
David, King David.
Mm-hmm. He raped her?
Well, she couldn't say no. Was it rape or not is a good question, but she couldn't say no to the king.
Bathsheba was only 7?
Right. Changes the story a little bit, right?
Hold on, is this one of those things where they did a bunch of calculations and it's like not for sure?
So let's say she wasn't 7. Let's just say she's a married woman. That's Yehurik Valyavar. So you'll say technically she wasn't married, right? But the Jewish people didn't feel so good about their king that minute. And God tells him he's going to lose 4 of his kids over it. You know, it's pretty harsh.
I mean, adultery is like pretty bad, but it's not as bad as pedophilia.
Fine. Okay, let's leave that for a second. We have two types of songs in Psalms. We have a song that begins Mizmor le David, and then we have a song that begins le David Mizmor. Seems similar, right? Mizmor le David, the Talmud tells us in Tractate Psachim, King David sang a song. Through the song, he attained prophecy. Le David Mizmor, he got his prophecy, and then from the prophetic vision, he gave out the song. Okay, so again, Mizmor le David, the song leads him to the prophetic vision to say over his psalm. Le David Mizmor means he's got prophecy, and from the prophecy emanates the song. Simple, right? Now let's think of the words. Mizmor, the song leads le David, to David. Meaning, who is David? Who am I? Am I the person who stands and davens and I have kavanah and I speak the way I should, I behave the way I should? Or am I the guy who, wait a second, I got so many things to be embarrassed about? But my identity, that's not my identity. Don't identify me as the guy who did that wrong. Oh yeah, I've done things that are wrong, but that's not who I am.
Isn't that just rationalizing?
No. David does tshuva. And David does everything he can to amend what he's done wrong and to do what's right. And again, the second I say that sin is my identity, then I'm a goner. I'm finished. How could I ever fix it? That's me.
I'm saying if from the opposite perspective, like we said, you know, somebody breaks Shabbat and they use that, the methodology that you were talking about of, well, you know, I do 80% right. In a way, that kind of justifies breaking Shabbat because, wow, what do you want? I learn Torah every day. Like I don't know, I do this. So
what? That's true. You could adulterate what we discussed. You could say that 80% makes 20% right, but that's not what we're saying. We're saying that the 20% doesn't make me bad. I got to remember the 80%, and that's who I am. And I'm going to work on the 20% without losing my identity.
Even if it's more than 20%?
A person can reach a point where it's 99%, and that's a different discussion, the idea of the spark that the Rebbe of Slonim writes, that every person has to think about. I have a spark of God in me. And I would add to that point, there are times when a person doesn't feel like he's even 10% right. He really feels like 95% is wrong. And you know what? David HaMelech had those moments too. His son raped his daughter, and he was told by God, that happened because of you. His next son killed his first son, who raped his sister, and God tells him, your fault. His next son rebels against him, and either he will die or his son will die, and God's telling him, your fault. The son who rebels against him rapes his concubines, and that's his fault. So now David breaks out with leprosy and no one will stand next to him. His fault. The people of Israel unite around Sarat. The people of Israel unite around Avshalom. You have a massive civil war looming. His fault. And then he turns to God and he asks a question and God's not answering him because it's his fault. So you know what David says? I guess I got to leave this religion because obviously I'm a goner. And his Rebbe shows up to him, Ira Hayairi, and says, stop. Our sages say he stopped him as he was climbing a mountain, barefoot, crying, with leprosy. Even the rabbis of the generation left him. Everyone looked at David and say, I don't want to use the words they said. It's a Gemara. It's Midrashim around the Psukim where Avshalom is walking out of Jerusalem. In Tanakh it says that David was walking up to the place where there was a standing. The Tanakh doesn't spell out what does it mean a standing. It says Rosh Lo Chafui, his head was bare. It says he was walking barefoot. It says he was crying. Yeah. And most of the story I said is in the Tanakh. Yeah, yeah. The leprosy and other stuff is derived from words. It's tradition. But we're short on time, so let's get back to the point.
Okay.
Sometimes the encouragement a person has is Rabbi Munatecha. If you want to go down that route of what happens when a person really feels he messed up, 95% wrong, and David had every reason to feel that way. God basically told him, you're a murderer. Pretty bad. King Saul, God tells him he's disgusted with him being king. I don't know how a person wakes up in the morning after God tells him a line like that. Whose world can I live in? God just said he's disgusted with me being king. I don't know how a person wakes up in the morning, but Rabbi Munatecha, sometimes the great encouragement is, he has faith in me, he gave me life again today. Obviously he thinks I have something to do with this life. Tov, this is a broad topic, you guys are taking it beyond where I wanted to take it.
Keep it going.
If we're going to take it beyond, then we have to talk about the strength of David and the idea that even when no one shines on David, he can shine from within.
Can we please talk about that?
Okay. You guys are taking me in the opposite direction, but fine, we'll go there. Teacher walks into class and says, I want to teach you the lesson of life now. Puts a white sheet of paper on the board. Takes a paintbrush, dips it in black paint. Takes the paintbrush, smack in the middle of the piece of paper, and starts making circles around that dot. So you have a very sharp, dark dot in the middle of the page, and circles around it. And as the teacher makes his circles broader and broader, the paint finishes on the paintbrush until you have little wisps, until he finishes all the paint, and then you look at this big piece of paper. It's got a dot in the middle that has completely black, and around it you see the lines get thinner and thinner until finally you have wisps of black. So the teacher says to the class, tell me what's the darkest spot on the page. They all point to the center. He says, where's the point with the least light? They all point to the center. Where do you have the most light? Where's the part of the page with the most light? They point to the different corners of the page. The teacher says, watch. Flicks a switch, and behind that black dot, a light bulb turns on. So the whole class goes, He says, wait a second. Now where's the point with the most light? So they go, the middle. He says, wait, here's what I want you to understand. Initially you guys said the place with the least light was that dot. That's not true as you see now. The place that reflects light the least is that middle dot. The place that reflects light the most are the corners of the page on the outside. Well, in life, we have times where everyone's shining on us. People tell you you're great. Your friends tell you you're funny. All around, you have excellent feedback. You feel good. That's great. People are massaging your ego. And we have it all the time. Great to see you. Good morning. This guy smiles. That guy smiles. Then you wake up one morning and you messed up on something. You did something really bad in the world. No one's smiling. Suddenly you feel like you have nothing positive to reflect because everyone feels you're bad. Now what? At those moments, you have to remember you have the capacity and responsibility to turn on your own light. That's the message of David HaMelech. His father, his siblings, the Jewish people look at him and say, what's he worth? His own father says, I'm not sure if he's my son. Maybe he's a bastard. There's questions about how his mother got pregnant. His siblings, every time there's an important conversation, they say, get out to the sheep. You don't understand anything. The guy is 30 years old. He's not a little boy. And yet everyone, his brother's talking to him and everyone's talking about him like he's the little one. Who cares about him? He's 30 years old. You're not talking about a 12-year-old. It's very obvious. He could send him to be the king's at 28. He could go play harp by the king 29. What you doing leaving the sheep alone? But he's the greatest warrior, potentially. But until the age of 29, 30, no one saw any of that. All they saw was, you're not worth anything, David. And Israel at large looks at him and says, he's a descendant of Ruth the Moabite. You can't even let your daughter go out with him. Questionable whether he's a kosher Jew or not. So David has to shine the light within. Turn on the light and say, Ribon Shalom gave me life. There's value in me. Even if the whole world doesn't say there's value in me, I know there's value in me. So after David messes up with Bathsheba, and even if we say it wasn't the sin the way the text reads, it wasn't as severe, it wasn't as harsh, at the end of the day, he caused the death of a fellow Jew. Not just a fellow Jew, but one of the chief generals, Uriah Hiti, one of the top generals.
Isn't that just lying to yourself?
No. The exact opposite. This is the truth.
I'm saying in David's case, it's quite clear because King David was a great man, but I'm saying with regular everyday people who they mess up pretty bad and the whole world tells them that, you know, they're bad. They don't have a real kodesh. They don't really have as much as what David had. So it seems like they're being stubborn to not accept other people's claims against them.
King David's turning on the light within does not mean that he denies the darkness he caused. You're assuming that by a person saying I have value, that means he's denying that he's messed up. No, David spends the rest of his life trying to make amends. He says, Chatati negdi tamid. He says, I never forget what I've done wrong. But he has the strength to deal with what he's done wrong. Because he does not say, I am the sin. I am a positive person. I did something that's wrong. When you can say, I am a positive person, then you can also say, I did something that's wrong. When you can't say that, then it's very hard to look at something and say, I did wrong. Because if that's me, so then I don't want that to be me. So then that's when I enter denial. But sometimes you say 80% is good. For most people, most of their lives, 80% of what they're doing is right. There's that 20% which is problematic, but that cannot be me. That shouldn't define me. Let me see the 80%. You asked, what about a guy who's done 99% wrong? Okay, there are times when you feel that way. Even then, you probably haven't done 99% wrong. Even when David HaMelech feels like he's the bottom rung, he's not. But I'm saying, even when you feel that way, God gave you life today, obviously He holds you deserve life. Oh, there are so many stories I have to tell you. Yeah, but we're out of time.
I don't know, we got time.
Last
one, quick question.
Yeah.
Was Uriah the Hittite, was he a Gerizetic?
Yes.
Can we have one story?
Okay.
Does the
Rav
want to...
But we have to like it if we don't like it.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Does the Rav...
You've already seen Ruben's and my slave labor.
Tov. Imagine the following story. We have, we'll call the guy Joe. Okay. Joe has been spending his life trying to get out of the rat race, and he has a wife, he has kids, And he'd really love to make a little bit more money. And a friend tells him he's got a hot tip. There's a stock which is going to go through the roof. And this friend he knows has given other people hot tips where they really made nice money. People paid for their kids' college bills and really did well with his hot tips. So Joe takes his savings, all $30,000 of them, and he invests it with this guy's hot tip. And this time the tip wasn't so hot. And he loses. He loses most of it. Those of you who are on the web anyways can look up the company, TCPI, if I'm not mistaken. It's a company that went from $2 to $4 to $6. So he was super excited. And he got out at about 12 cents. Now, he got in at $2. When it got to $6, he said, this is amazing. And his friend told him, it's going to make hundreds of dollars because the company had a patent, I think, on something in diabetes. They were a pharmaceutical company. And then what happened was, there was a regulation that came out that took away all the patents in that area. And the company went belly up. And now Joe was out almost all his money. Figure he lost more than 90% of his money. He walked away from that deal, put in $30,000, walked away with under three. Okay? So he lost his life savings. And on the day that the company, everyone was waiting to see what the FDA would rule. If the regulations went in the companies, he didn't even follow. He just went with Mr. So-and-so's hot tip. Okay? So Joe suddenly calls in to see what his stock is worth. And he can't believe it. It went from $6 to about 30 cents. And he's like in shock. And he turns his eyes to heaven and starts wagging his finger and saying, I can't believe you did this to me. What do I want to do? All I wanted to do was make an honest living. All I wanted to do was put my kids through college. All I wanted to do was be a good Jew. How could you do this to me? And the rest of the conversation will leave to your imagination. It didn't end there. The only problem was that Joe had a very guilty conscience. He was generally a good person. And as he's wagging his finger and saying all kinds of not nice things, his phone rings. And one of the kids is on the phone, and he says, Mom was just in an accident. I'm sitting next to the car. Could you come? And he tries to understand from the kid where the car is located. And the police show up to the scene. And his wife is fighting for her life. And she's already lost a few limbs. And the story gets worse. Finally, he loses his wife. Now he's got kids that are maimed. Right. The same day, the same minutes, he's yelling towards heaven. His wife was hit, I don't remember if it was by a trailer or what. Her car was totaled. She ultimately lost her life. Some of the kids lost limbs. And this all happened the minutes he's standing there wagging his fingers towards heaven, yelling, I can't believe you did this to me. And he, little does he know that as he's yelling this, boom. Okay, so now...
He really has a claim.
Joe, oh, you could say he really has a claim. Or... what he was feeling was, me and my big mouth. He was feeling that, you know, he held himself accountable for it. So now Joe has to look into the face of his orphans, and some of them are missing limbs. And Joe feels, I'm not saying legitimately or not, but Joe definitely feels that on some degree, he did this to them. What's Joe's chakra supposed to be like the next morning? How does Joe get out of bed and deal with life? Because he has to deal. He can't stay in bed. So I'm bringing you the story because sometimes you guys keep saying, what happens when you got nothing. Sometimes a person really feels like he did terrible things. He really, really messed up. Let's take a less radical story, but very true, happened many, many times. A person gets into gambling. And I don't know if you guys know what gambling's like, but when a person gets into gambling, they're not just gambling like once a year, they're gambling every day. And they're not just gambling with their money, they end up gambling with their savings, with their home, with their car. And one day a person wakes up and realizes, hey, I lost everything. He lost his wife, he lost his kids, he lost his car, he lost his savings, his reputation. He suddenly wakes up and looks around him and says, hey, where'd I get to? How'd I get here? He's got good reason to look at life and say, wait a second, what did I do? Right? How does he deal with life then? So you'll say, isn't he lying? And I'll say, no, he's being very realistic. He's saying, I have intrinsic value. The actions I have done until now will not define who I am. I have to define who I am. There is value to me, even though I've done all these things wrong. That doesn't change my value. Now I have to do something with that value. Part of what I have to do is rectify that, but a big part of what I have to do is move forward, look forward, and not let everything that went wrong or that I did wrong define who I am. That is one of the great challenges in life. Our generation specifically, over and over again, we define ourselves by what we do wrong.
You define yourself by what you do. I'm not saying that would usually, wholly define what you do, but to some degree it does.
Agreed. Okay, that's why I was wondering which story to tell you. So, story two. Right, that's
you
also true.
Right away, you change and you can...
Something you don't, I'm saying...
He's saying you can't deny that a person to some degree is what he does. To some degree, that defines him. But he has to be able to say, wait, there's me and there's what I've done wrong. David HaMelech looks at his family, looks at the wreck he's made of his life. 10 of his wives he's never going to be able to be with again. Those are 10 women whose lives were destroyed. I'm not only talking about the event of rape. I'm talking about the rest of their lives. He's never going to be able to go back to them.
A person can shift his perspective on himself and on life and right away totally become a totally different person. Just in one moment. It can be a whole life of just hell and pain, and then just right in one moment he realizes this is what I've been doing wrong. He gets the point, changes. That's it. That moment, he doesn't even have the intrinsic value he had before. Now it's like 10 times more because he gets rid of that one problem that's been holding him back the whole time. Or 3 problems. Who knows?
Yeah, but I think that realistically, contending with the problems is like David HaMelech said. David said, "Chatati negdi tamid." He didn't say, I did tshuva then. And he did do tshuva then.
Right.
But it's an ongoing process. I think that you have the strength for the process...
Right.
When you can see your own value, when you can see what I do right, I think so. I think you're, but it like Benny keeps stressing. But you got to do something with it. You can't use it as a lie. I have intrinsic value, so therefore whatever I did doesn't matter. That's not what we're saying.
No.
I've got to deal with what I did. But what's going to give me the strength to deal with what I did? The fact that that's not my ID card. I've done things wrong. Fine. Now let me deal. Maybe we'll conclude with the great story of David HaMelech, the story of the kid who walks home after his mother just finished cleaning the house for Shabbos, and he walks in with his muddy shoes, and he walks to his room, and his mother's on her way to light candles, and suddenly she sees a trail of footsteps, and she looks down the hall just as he looks up to look back at her, and their eyes meet over the trail of muddy footsteps that he just made across the house. He looks at her, she looks at him, and before she can yell, he goes, "One second, Ma, one second." Runs to the bathroom, gets the mop, gets the pail, starts mopping up everything he's gotten dirty. That's David HaMelech. How could she yell at him? It's not that he didn't get the floor muddy. It's that he says, okay, now it's my responsibility to fix it. all too often we let ourselves get bogged down with, I'm the guy who messed up my mother's floor. Oh, I'm so sorry. Who asked you to be sorry? Deal with it.
It's an Israeli way.
Okay, but I'm saying that's the strength of David. He says, okay, I'm going to deal. And you get that strength from saying, okay, I have the light. I don't need to reflect other people's light.